Welcome, welcome, friends. We need some of Jennifer's music to be in the background right now as we wait for the top of the hour. We'll just wait to see who's, we advertise this as 2 p.m. Eastern time, so we'll give folks a chance to get on LinkedIn, and there'll be just millions of people wanting to hear you. I think they just want to hear you do a rock performance. I certainly do.
There you go.
I want to see you in Raspberry Park or something,
Well, if you're
That's
ever in Northern New
Raspberry
Jersey, you can come check us out.
Park. Okay, yeah, I might just do that. I might just do that. So I'm going to pull up this introduction and
What's the last song that you have performed on stage, Jennifer, most recently? What was your encore?
Love Is Alive by Joan Osborne. Do you know that one?
Okay, I know Joan Osborne. I mean, but I think I only know If God Was One of Us. Is that her song? Yeah, I don't think I know too many of her other songs. She might even say If God Were, God Was. I can't remember. Does she use that tense? Anyway, fun.
Respect by Aretha is also a great one.
We all know that one. Yeah, awesome.
All right, and just checking to see, and yes, we are over there on LinkedIn Live. Okay, it's working. You never know with technology. I might make it into Central Jersey, which is in June, visit a widow spouse of a friend of mine who just recently passed away. So we might get up there to Red Bank, not too far
Okay,
from.
that's not too far.
Did you ever play at the Count Basie Theater?
No, but I've been there. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Great place.
All right, get my intro ready. And here we go. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Leadership Deep Dive. My name is David Landjuli, and I'm here with my good friend and colleague, Margaret Katzkan. Hey, Margaret.
Hey, David.
Hey, Margaret, we have a super cool guest with us today, Jennifer Doty. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, David. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here with us. And I'm just gonna share with the audience a little bit about you, Jennifer. You're got quite an interesting background. You're a former Fortune 100 vice president. You're a speaker and an author of Just Lead and another book, Find the Right Now Role. And you're drawing on 20 plus years of executive experience and your own reinvention. You help leaders and teams get unstuck by shifting the beliefs that drive behavior and performance. And these days, you're building a portfolio career anchored by your work with Live Pure. So, I want to hear a little bit about that. And for the last 8 years, you have been the lead singer of a classic rock cover band called Primrose Path. So, you are our first rock star on the show, so welcome, rock star.
Thank you so much. I love
Oh, we're just totally like bragging on you right now. It's so cool, you know. Well, we, you, when you and I met a couple of weeks ago, you talked about a topic that intrigued me. And it's about your life story where you had a really successful career, but you were miserable. So perhaps you could share with us what's that all about?
Absolutely. So, the story starts back when I went to college. I'm the oldest of four daughters. I grew up in the state of New Jersey. And when I went to college, my parents said to me, please go find a major and a career where you can get a job when you graduate, right? And so I chose accounting, not because I loved it or I was super passionate about it, but that it came easy enough for me and I was good enough at it, right? And so
And
I
you
got
were, hold on, let me intro, you were introverted enough because I could see that with a being front, lady in a rock band and the way you express it. So you clearly were introverted.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I confused a lot of people. My first job was at Deloitte & Touche in Los Angeles. And I confused a lot of people when I showed up as the auditor.
I was very colorful.
I have red hair. You know, I was very, you know, extroverted. I talked a lot. And they're like, you are our auditor? Like, how did that happen? I'm like, I don't know. I'm here. I'm here to do the job, right? And so, like, that's where my career journey started, right? Go find something to do that's going to pay the bills, that's going to put a roof over my head, right? And so passion about what I did wasn't, like, in the conversation back in those days. And then from there, I took a couple other roles. As soon as I could get myself out of public accounting, I did a couple different roles in startup companies, and then eventually got myself into MetLife. And, you know, I don't think anybody grows up and says, I want to grow up and go into group insurance. Like, it just happens, right? And I was trying to get myself from Boston back to New Jersey to be closer to family. And I succeeded. And I thought this MetLife gig would be like a year, 2 years. I'll go find something after that. And lo and behold, it lasted almost 20 years, right? And I had almost 19 roles over the course of that career. Very grateful for the experiences that I had. I started in finance. I worked as a chief of staff to a senior executive in two different lines of business at the company. I worked in mergers and acquisitions. I did divestitures. And then ultimately, I landed for the last 10 years of my career in the group benefits space, rolling out products, leading marketing, and ultimately running all of group benefit operations for the US, including during COVID before I left MetLife. And so many of those navigations were based on, you know, mentors and sponsors giving me advice and guidance on what I should do next, right? And so some of the time I would apply for the role, other times I would sort of just be nudged, was sort of the way it felt like over that time, right?
So the way you tell that story is with great pride and enthusiasm. So what about it sucked?
So it wasn't until probably the last, I don't know, couple of years-ish, right? I realized I had super high anxiety, and this kind of goes with my Live Pure story. That's how I found Live Pure, right? I was newly divorced and I wasn't sleeping through the night, and my digestive system was a mess, and my anxiety was super high, and my energy levels were horrible. Like, I'd need, you know, a cup of coffee, you know, every other hour on the hour I was drinking coffee to just kind of keep myself like in the moment, right? And I didn't realize that part of what I was experiencing was not just my environment, but also by choice. Like, I was choosing that every single day, and I was truly miserable. I was miserable more times than not. And I'd put like lipstick on the pig and go to work and make it look good every single day. And it wasn't until I left MetLife. And I said to somebody a couple of weeks ago, you know, had they not eliminated my job, David, I might still be there. Right. And so the biggest
miserable.
And the biggest to me was leaving. It really was.
There's something as you're describing this story, like I sort of half jokingly talk about my family's force field and the set of values, you know, that they have, and how much many of my clients, me, it sounds like you a little bit, but that's what I'm sort of curious about. Like, we take these values of our families as our own, and we don't examine them. And my family was, you know, like, you go to the best college you get into, you know, you go be somebody important, you go, you know, you make us like proud to talk about you at a cocktail party, like do something cool. So that, right, there's so much of that. But I'm hearing from you that you got the advice before you left, like, for the love of God, like, make a living, you know, go out into the world, go do something. And yeah, I'm sort of curious, like,
we'll
what the values
something.
Are. Yeah. What do you think the values were?
I would say they were grounded in people pleasing. So I was the oldest, right? And I knew if I could make everyone around me happy, that was how I created value. And so I did that in my job. If I did a good job, the people around me were happy. And that's where I found my value and my sense of worth, which is really a hard place to be. And because, you know, you're basically saying you aren't, you don't feel good or safe unless everybody around you is happy. And, it, and that, so that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work and a lot of things to manage. But that's really what I've done, a lot of soul searching, a lot of therapy, a lot of self-development to learn that about myself. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think Margaret could have something to say about that.
Well, yeah, I have over the last, I'm going to say maybe a similar time frame to you, right? Or, you know, maybe since 2019, just before COVID, but I've been, as part of divorce and leaving a 20-year career, have had my own come to Jesus with my people pleaser and have tried very hard to understand the impact of how much that can rule one's life. And even as I hear you describe, you know, these promotions and these pivots within the company, and it was all because somebody said like, oh, you would be good at this. Or what they're really thinking is like, you could solve my problem if you come over and do this for me, like that it really has nothing to do with you at the end of the day, other than you're clearly competent and smart. And I'm sure you did a fabulous job.
Yeah.
You
know? I had a very wise mentor somewhere towards the end of my career say to me, be careful, because you will always be helpful to someone else. And you will always be able to do what somebody else needs you to do to help them. But the question truly is that helpful to you? Is that helpful to your career? Is that helpful to where you are in your life? Yes or no, right? And so I never for a minute used to think about that. I always worried about, well, if I was productive and helpful to somebody else, yay me, Margaret, right? Like I was doing great, right?
Right. And it somebody wasn't piggy bank is
so. Yeah. Here's a bit of the paradox with the pleaser saboteur, we call it, the way we sabotage ourselves and others and the organizations we actually work in or for, is that it's, as a leader, it's perfectly natural to want to be of service. In fact, if you don't have that lens, you're probably not a leader, to be honest. So there's that. And then there's the big end. At the same time, this is a question that most pleasers will not ask themselves. It's, what do I really want?
Yeah.
So that's the essential question for the pleaser, and you'll lie to yourself about that.
Or
you could ask the question in a different way. Yeah, exactly. Oh, I don't know what I want, so I'll
just.
That's
a ridiculous question. Why are you even asking me that?
Yeah, exactly. The pleaser might not ever even ask him or herself that question.
What I struggled with is, am I even worthy to want anything? Do I deserve to have a choice?
Yeah. And that's a different saboteur in our lexicon. So this would be more like the inner critic, an aspect of what we call the self-judge, is like, I'm not good enough, or am I good enough? Or, you know, how could they even think of me as worthy, and I'm unworthy? And this is a very, also combines with the pleaser in a very nasty way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we talked to David, what I'm thinking about is that zone of excellence, right? Which is like, you can get stuck in there till death, right?
Right.
Do you know what we're talking about, Jennifer, with the zone of incompetence, the zone of competence, the zone of excellence, and the zone of genius?
It's a book. I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, just for the audience, it might be helpful, right? Yeah. So these four zones of work, mostly this is related to your work life. Could be other areas of your life as well, but the zone of incompetence, like there's no way in hell I should be doing this. And you kind of know it. And you it's easier to say no to those sorts of invitations.
For me, that would be accounting, just saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's the zone of competence, and this is where things start to get tricky, because many of us, including myself, I say with humility, can become competent at something. It sounds like you did that for 20 years too. You went from this area of the business to this area of the business to this area of the business, and you became competent in all of them. And so that can be a little tricky, but you know, yeah, I could do that. It's kind of like that, right? It's not like you're really excited about it. Now, what's the zone of excellence, Margaret?
The zone of excellence is like stuff you're really good at, right? Like you're beyond competent. You're making everybody happy. You do a really good job. It certainly aligns with your skills.
An outside observer would say,
she's got a really success. She's so successful.
Excellent. Yeah, she's excellent at that.
Like, in my life.
Yeah. Right.
But then there's this promise of, you know, which it sounds like you hopefully are spending more time in, but the zone of genius, which you are excellent at, and it lights you up, right? It gives you fuel for the day. It gives you energy. It connects with some sense of purpose. It results from you asking the question, like, what do I love? What do I want? And helps, you know, kind of get you there. But that zone of excellence can be a, you know, an infinite whirlwind,
a trap
that you can't get out of. Yeah.
And what I would love is advice from the both of you. When you're moving into the zone of genius and you know what feels amazing and you're really good at it, but you still have a leg in the zone of excellence. Yeah. Any advice for people like us?
It's tricky. Because I would recommend, I mean, you can always do things in your zone of excellence. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like there's lots of things that both Margaret and I do, in our interactions and in our businesses that we're competent at, and we may even be excellent at, like for example, fundraising, we're both excellent fundraisers and Margaret still works with fundraisers, but in her zone of genius as a coach, right? And she can give people excellent advice on fundraising, which she does. Probably not the thing that most lights you up, Margaret, or I would say.
I think that's definitely true.
Okay. But the coaching aspect, the development of the fundraising leader is what lights you up. And yes, you could give excellent advice when you're asked.
Yeah. But I think for when people are stuck like that, you know, you just can't, like, you might have a couple toes here, but your entire left leg is still over there. I think there's conversations about permission. There's conversations about the future you. I've done a lot of Dear Universe letters. You know, one year from today, I wake up and ... You know, and I got to tell you, when you let yourself inhabit that space, you are never doing the stuff that sucks, right? Like, but you have to give yourself permission to at least imagine it first, that you could fully pull that foot out of the water. You know, the coaching can help a lot, as it sounds like you've sought out a lot of resources to reconcile the false promise of the pleaser.
Yes.
Right? Those empty promises that the pleaser makes to you that you've believed strategically for a really long time. And you have to kind of, you have to be ready to believe something different.
I think another thing that helped me when I was leaping, it is a leap. So when I leapt from being an excellent fundraiser and fundraising leader, making a very, very nice living in the state of New Jersey, leading a team of 10 fundraisers, raising a whole bunch of money for the university. I was being drawn to my zone of genius, which is coaching. And I was tempted to stay because all my economic goodies and the values I have around providing for my family and being a good father and husband in the sense of being a provider was tied up. So those are all very good values. And yet, if you're going to work in your zone of genius and not solely your zone of excellence, you're going to have to take a leap sometime, which is what you did. Or maybe they pushed you and you leapt. And I had a bit of a push-pull there too. I mean, I was being pulled, and for many reasons, the organization was, you know, as I was growing in my zone of genius, I wasn't fitting in as well to my zone of excellence in that environment. So there are signals. And at some point, you might just have to take a big gulp and leap.
Yeah. I find the shifts happen sometimes before you actually see them. And then at some point, enough shifts have happened and you're like, how did I get here? And how does it look and feel like this when it never looked and felt like that? And then you realize how many shifts have occurred in your life, right? Mm-hmm. To get you to that place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think when you're in the role of a mentor or a coach, sometimes something incredibly powerful is to mirror back to people how differently they show up when they're in their zone of genius. You know, we're seeing you here today and you are full of life and your bright colors, right? Like, you seem like somebody who loves her life, right? And helping reflect that back to people when they are hanging out in that really sweet spot for them to just, wow, just notice, like, you're lit up today, you know, help them see how much better they feel pulling themselves out. The spin of excellence.
So what would you say is your zone of genius right now? And this can shift over time.
My zone of genius these days is doing things like this, which is why I'm very vibrant and happy to be here, because I so enjoy sharing my experiences with other people, sharing my journey with other people, because I know there's someone out there like me, right, who is unsure, who might be thinking about adding on to their life. You know, I always say adding on because a portfolio career can be more than one thing. And I was raised in the era where you went to work, you got a job. If you're lucky, you retired from there and then you died one day. Like, you, there wasn't a lot of optionality, right? And so I'm here to share that it is possible to do more than one thing. It's possible to create something and grow something all while still having this 9-to-5, you know, version of you that you nurture, right? And so to answer your question, it's you know, doing speaking engagements, podcasts, workshops, helping people get unstuck and get out of their own way, whether that's teams or individuals. And then in addition to that, I've built a super successful business on the side of my desk that I just launched a little over a year ago with Live Pure, which is nutrition and supplementation. And I've personally been part of this company and consuming this nutrition for 9 years now. And so my girlfriend reached out to me 8 years ago, like I had said, I was newly divorced. I had a tremendous job at MetLife and I really needed to get my health on track. And this supplementation helped. And then I went for years and didn't tell anybody about it, right? I was trying to just get myself like stable, right? And then a year ago, I woke up and said, wouldn't it be kind of cool if these products were free, if I could get these products paid for? It's $150 a month. I have 2 kids in college now who all consume the products. And that first month, not only were the products paid for, but I paid my mortgage payment on my home in Northern New Jersey with this business. And I've done it every single month since. And so I am super passionate about helping people see that there is, if not this, there's plenty of opportunities on how could you do that? How would you go about creating an additional income stream? I mean, I don't know, maybe people are interested in you know, health and wellness and might be interested in partnering with me in what I'm doing, right? I mean, I'm in the midst of not just building teams of people who can share this in the US, but I'm helping the company roll this out in the UK and in Europe as we speak. That was, you know, one of the calls I had this week, right? And those types of things, I get to leverage all of the things I've done from a corporate career, my organizational skills, my ability to communicate, my ability to problem solve, but in a very different way. In a space that speaks to my heart and my soul and something I'm really passionate about doing, all while building a significant income on the side of my desk. And so that's what lights me up right now these days and what I'm so excited to focus on.
Well, and back to the conversation about zone of excellence and zone of genius, you're combining, what I'm hearing is that you're combining both right now. So you still are doing a lot of things that are in your zone of excellence in terms of all the skills that you built over the years at MetLife and elsewhere, and just applying them, which is like, it's fine. Yeah, you never lose your excellence in things that you've learned. It's just that you're doing them to support your zone of genius. Yeah, that's
exactly
what I'm hearing. Yeah, that's good. I like that. I like that.
Yeah, and it sounds like you have a value now that is much more aligned with like things that have worked for you, right? It's like things you've actually tried and had experience with and that have made a difference. Like that's where purpose lives.
Yes. I mean, I know these products work, right? I mean, it's a cleanse, balance, build philosophy around cleansing, you know, the toxins out of your body, balancing out your hormones and your pH and building yourself up with good nutrition. And like I said, by routine over 8 years, I'm a product of the products. Like I know how I feel. I know how I've watched other people's stories and testimonies of things that have happened in their life, right? Whether it's someone's child or spouse or parent, right? And I know that to be true. And so to your point, that is my purpose in believing that this can help almost 100% of the population in some way, shape, or form. And so the product side of this that the company has, I'm super passionate about. My sisters tease me. They're like, you're going to live to be over 100 and we'll all be dead except for you, right? So I don't know. If you have sisters, you kind of know. I mean, I have three. So it's, but yeah, I mean, I do know it works for me and I'm excited to share that with other people. I'm not excited.
Feeling curious, you said that your job was eliminated.
My job at MetLife was eliminated, yes, back in 2020.
Tell us a little bit about how, you know, I mean, you, the pleaser, you may have been miserable, but it didn't sound like you were intrinsically motivated or ready yet to do anything radical. So they eliminated your job. Like, tell us about that chapter.
Yes. So, they eliminated my job. They gave me a little bit of time, which was awesome. So I could look for a job with a job for a period of time. And this was a time when, you know, in 2003, when I came to MetLife, Margaret, there was no LinkedIn, right? This was back when recruiters went and got you a job. Like it was a very different dynamic and hiring, you know, mechanism and model. And so when I was leaving MetLife, I didn't have a network on LinkedIn. I needed to establish one. I needed to figure out, you know, how I was going to leverage making sure people saw me and that I was visible. And that's when my first book sort of came to fruition kind of by mistake, which was Just Lead, because I had a recruiter who said to me, he went on my profile and he goes, you know, you just like things. That is not being on LinkedIn. You need a voice, you need a story. And I'm like, dear God, what would somebody want to hear from me about and why, right? And I'll never forget the first time I posted, I created this series of what they never told me about being a leader. And it was like things you could only learn by experience. No book was gonna teach you, no boss was gonna teach you. And I was doing it two, three times a week. And within 3 months, a friend of mine from MetLife called and he said, you need to put that stuff in a book. And I'm like, why? Those people will buy that. This is good advice, like your words of wisdom. And so I found through my sister, found somebody who could help me create a book, laid out, stick it on Amazon for me. And it was like the first time I used my own voice to create something for me, right? And then fast forward, I networked and did some part-time work at Accenture. And 6 months later, had the job I have today. My 9-to-5 role is I work at a technology startup for group insurance carriers and brokers. It's an amazing platform that drives efficiency and effectiveness in their day-to-day business. And I run the customer operations. I'm the vice president of customer operations of the team. And I've been here for almost 4 years this summer, right? And so I leveraged the self-development work that I was working on to really come back and say, what environment do I want to work in? What type of people do I want to be around every day? And what type of, you know, how do I want to work? No, I don't want to schlep to Manhattan 5 days a week. That is not the me anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, I like to travel once in a while and I'm happy to get on a plane and go meet with, you know, our team or the leadership team, all that kind of thing, right? And so what was I available for? And so it helped me create a new part of my career where I could continue to leverage and create an income stream that that I wanted and needed, as well as be more true to who I was by saying that my goal was to do great work with great people. And that was ultimately, I created like a list, and this is how I want to feel. And then I'd go on interviews, Margaret, and I'd say, how did that match? Did it match or did it not? And it was amazing to see you'd go on the one call and be like, well, that wasn't it. And then you'd go on another one. You're like, I could talk to David for like another hour. Like, this was fun. Like, let's do more of this. Right. But I was listening to like my gut a lot more than my head. Mm-hmm. And that's when things changed for me.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Your pleaser is starting to heal.
Yes.
Sort of pull the leash out of you. Yeah.
Beautiful thing.
Yeah. Where would you put rock and roll star in all of this?
So the best thing about singing in a classic rock band is you get very good at things that you need in the rest of your life, especially in a corporate role, thinking on your feet, ad-libbing, picking up on vibes of people around you. Like when they missed the loop of the song and you're like, you're going to do that again because I missed my entrance. Are we good? But you're saying it with your eyeballs, right? And so all of those things kind of work in both worlds. And I never imagined that by standing in front of a room of people and singing on a stage could make me better in my day job and vice versa. But it is true. And so I find it's a great, it's also a great release. It's a great, you know, it definitely ups my, you know, my mood when I get to rehearse and get to play. So I leverage that for those parts of my life that, you know, need that kind of energy and kind of build up my tank, so to speak.
Hmm. So I'm hearing, you know, it's in your zone of genius because it gives you great joy. And here's the thing, and maybe you're not making too many dollars on those gigs.
Oh,
and
no.
Yeah. And that's perfectly okay because you've got this portfolio professional life going on where you're dipping into areas that are in both your zone of excellence and zone of genius. And some of them are paying and some of them aren't. And that's okay too, you know? Any other thoughts, Margaret, or questions?
We always ask our guests, Jennifer, to leave our listeners with something to try at home. So do you have a little nugget?
Yes, something that they can, you know, as they're thinking about their life and their career, and maybe you've inspired them to have this kind of portfolio approach to it. What are some of the practices or something they could try?
Yeah. So what works for me is every night before I go to bed, I have a notepad next to my, like a notebook next to my bed. And every night I write down three wins of the day, three things I'm grateful for, and then three goals for tomorrow. And so the inner critic in me is usually every day saying, you know, I get to the end of the day, what did I even do today? What did I get done? Was it a good day? And so it allows me to reflect before I close my eyes on all the things that went well, the things I'm super grateful for. I'm a big believer when you're grateful and you express your gratitude, you get more, yes, more, please, universe, send me more of those things that I'm grateful for. And then setting up my goals for tomorrow. And it's a nice way to say, if I get these three things done tomorrow, it's been a good day, right? And so that also just helps me, you know, plan ahead and get my head in the right mindset as I start, you know, the next day.
And if folks are in the audience are inspired by what you're up to, whether it's with Live Pure or your books, where can they find you? And I know where to find you, and we're going to put those contacts in the show notes for the episode. But where can they find you? Best way.
You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm very visible and vocal there. You can also contact me at jenniferdoty.com, my website, or my email, which is here as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today, Jennifer. It's been joyful.
It has. Very energetic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
sharing your story with us and our listeners.
I'll just say that there are quite a few professionals now with the advent of AI and things that are going on that are maybe finding themselves in the position that you are in, and you could be a great resource for them. So thank you for sharing what's possible with the audience.
Thank you.